36 hours. Jeez.
We're seriously understaffed.
Oh, yeah. It'd be great if we had a Hulk right about now. Any shot?
You really think he'd be on our side?
Come
on. I have an idea.
Me too. Where's yours?
Downstairs. Where's yours?
Not every situation calls for the whole team. But even the likes of Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, and Iron Man, Tony Stark, feel it when there aren't enough of them to handle the job, like in this scene from 2016's Captain America: Civil War. Staffing plans are important for all kinds of businesses, including, apparently, the superhero business. But in the contact center world, instead of super soldiers, Nazis, and politicians to worry about, workforce management professionals must deal with call arrival patterns, average handle times, shrinkage, and so much more to ensure that customer interactions are handled in a timely manner. WFM, or workforce management, may not have the excitement of a Marvel movie, but if you ask Irina Mateva, it's definitely not boring. This week on Next in Queue, Irina joins me and we talk about how she got into the world of WFM, functions of WFM, the critical nature of forecasting, how intraday management impacts the business, the biggest myth about WFM, whether average handle time should be an agent KPI, why no WFM technology is one size fits all, how WFM solutions can impact employee experience, and why a WFM consultant might be right for you. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy 2 Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy 2 Vision. Learn more at happitu.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Irina, thank you for being Next in Queue. How are you?
First of all, thank you for the invitation. I'm really well. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, so I'm doing pretty good having to talk to you today.
Well, I appreciate that. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that some people may go, ooh, Rob, that sounds a little boring, but it's not boring. Yeah, see, exactly, that look on your face. For those of you who are not watching the video version of this, you should see the look that Irina just shot me when I said some people might find it boring. And I stand by that, but we're not going to let it be boring today. We're going to talk about workforce management. You are the founder of Right Now WFM. But before we talk about it, I want to know, like, how did you get into WFM? Because that is not something, much like contact centers in general, that is typically not something that someone goes when they're, you know, in school, they think, gosh, when I grow up, I want to work in WFM. That's just not a thing, I don't think. So how did you get into it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's not boring. So if anyone ever thinks workforce management is boring, come my way, I'm going to explain you different. But as you mentioned, Rob, I absolutely stumbled upon workforce management planning by accident. I changed jobs and I started working in a contact center in the planning department. And quite quickly, I fell in love with it because, you know, all of those moving bits and pieces and the logic behind everything, there's quite a lot of numbers. I agree that might be considered the boring part for a lot of people. But what people don't maybe see is there is quite a lot of communication and interaction and engagement internally in the organization that's happening. And often the technical part is even less important, I would say, than building those relationships within the organization. So I started moving between different functions. I became a forecaster. I started doing intraday management. I became a manager. And then eventually I went into consultancy. And I was working for a global project for IKEA for quite some years. I think it was around 4 years. And then I switched to a vendor. So I worked for the vendor side for a year and a half before I decided it's time. I have to do it. It's a passion of mine. I really want to go on my own and be able to help any way that I can, absolutely unfiltered.
That's quite the journey. I want to actually dig into some things that you just mentioned, because I want to talk about what goes into WFM. And so you talked about a few of the functions there. I think for some people, they think of it as just one thing. And it's really not. There are a lot of different functions within the umbrella of WFM. So let's just start with forecasting. Tell me about forecasting and what makes it a challenge and what makes a really good forecaster.
So how much time do we have? Like,
I'm not sure, but we have enough time to at least get, we can get the basics in, I think.
Okay. Starting with the basics, quite a big amount of data is going into forecasting. So what we're actually trying to do is to predict at what times customers are going to reach out to us and interact with us, how long it would take us to be able to handle the customer inquiries, to support with their questions, to help with their concerns or issues. And we're trying to understand how many people we would need in the organization to be able to handle that amount of work. Now, as I said, there is a lot of data that goes into it. We're trying to understand on interval level for every day of the week, for every month. We're gathering the data sometimes for a year, for 2 years in order to make those predictions. But what we're also trying to do is to gather every sort of events that might impact our business. And you might think about it as marketing events. Sometimes the weather can influence how people are reaching out to you and how many people are reaching out to you. So all of that data in combination represents a workload, what we refer to the amount of work that we need to handle in order for us as a business to serve our customers.
Yeah. One of the things that you talked about that is, I think people forget about is things that impact the business impact the volume. So for instance, I just put a post out today. I'm a T-Mobile customer as one of the big wireless carriers here in the United States. And I've been on the same plan for the last 10 years. And I know that this month they're going to make me call in to opt out of going to a different plan, right? And so this is a business decision that will most certainly change their volume, because they're going to have a lot more customers calling in because they have to call in if they don't want this new plan, right? So that's a business decision. It's really easy to plan for. And you have probably a pretty good gauge with the right amount of data of how many customers are impacted and how many customers do we think are going to actually call, right? What's the rate of customers that are going to bother calling us? And so we can plan for that. Then you talked about weather. And I think this is something that people don't think a lot about. And it may depend on your business. But a long time ago, we supported a customer that did extended stay. They were kind of like a hotel, but you would rent them a week at a time. Mm-hmm. And hurricanes, when they would come through the US, all of a sudden the business would go through the roof because people were leaving their homes because a hurricane was coming and they were looking for a place to stay that was relatively inexpensive. And so for us to rely on the forecast based just on historical data was worthless. We had to keep in mind that weather had such a huge impact on the call volume that our forecast, when we looked back at previous years, we had to know, like, was there a hurricane on this particular date? Is that what was driving the volume, et cetera?
Yeah, and this is exactly what a good forecaster should do, should look at all of the aspects of the business and should be monitoring those events that can potentially impact your volumes. Because as you mentioned, it could be some internal decisions that you're aware of, but it could be that you are airliner and due to the weather conditions, a lot of flights have been canceled. So people were going to start reaching out to reschedule their flights if this is not available in the app or in a digital version. So there are a lot of things that are impacting the forecast. And this is the difference between a good forecast and maybe not so good of a forecast, that this needs to be tracked separately and the impact of those should be understood.
Now, let's talk about what happens when I miss my forecast, maybe badly. What are the potential impacts?
Oh, well, a lot of people suffer, and those are not necessarily only the customers that are getting angry that they can't reach anyone. But for me, as a planner, there is quite a big impact on your employees as well. And, you know, it's been the forever issue in contact centers that there is a big attrition and contact centers are usually understaffed, right? So agents or advisors on the phone are already under a lot of pressure. It's a heck of a difficult job to be on the phone and to deal with customers. You have to deal with angry customers. You have to deal with your performance, with your schedule adherence. So you have to be constantly alerted. But imagine that somebody missed the forecast or messed it up. I, as a planner, messed up when to schedule you. So I end up having a huge amount of calls and not many agents on the phone. And I can tell you that burnout is real. The time between the calls is less. Sometimes it's non-existent. And the tension is going to be a lot. And eventually it becomes a vicious cycle. The impact on the agents is significant. And the quality towards the customers is going to drop down as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the podcast name derives from partially, right, my experience as an agent. Like when you're in queue, meaning that calls are stacked up and waiting from an agent perspective, that's just, it's not a fun day. Like you just know, not only am I not going to get a breather in between calls or chats or emails, right? Because they just keep coming in and there's no moment to just take a breath. But with calls in particular, if they're waiting in queue a long time, mm-hmm. they're already frustrated, even more frustrated when they get to you than they would have been if they got straight through to a person. So maybe they're listening to your horrible hold music or your marketing message that's really just upsetting them even more because they're experiencing a problem. And so from an agent perspective, you're right. It has a huge impact, not just on the customers.
No, and you're right about that, that the longer a customer waits in the queue, the more frustrated they are. So the call naturally takes longer because the customer tries to vent, starting the conversation in maybe not the nicest of ways. And you're already tired as an agent. You know that the work is immense at that moment. And then you have to deal with an angry customer. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, and it can snowball for sure. Let's talk about intraday. So you mentioned intraday. Tell us what that means. What does intraday mean?
It's interesting that you're asking me this question. I recently had that conversation with a great lady. She's absolutely amazing. She's a fellow planner as well. And we discussed what intraday means for us. And it's quite different. It's division between us in the community. So For some of us, intraday means that we need to make sure that we're changing skills at all times in order for our agents to take calls and to handle the customer interactions. For me, it's more the case of I need to make sure that you are monitoring what's happening, you're analyzing what's happening, and you're able to give me insights to know if I need to make some changes in the schedules, whether it's for today or it's for the upcoming days. So to put it simple, let's say that I have my plan. I know Europe needs to be handling emails today. You have your one-to-one schedule today, but your fellow agents are absolutely drowning in calls and they are under the water and they're exhausted. It could be that I, as an intraday specialist, reach out to my planner and say, hey, can we push that one-to-one coaching because we need that help on the line. So for me, intraday is a way to monitor everything that's happening today and to be able to react, but also to be able to extract those insights and feed it back to your planner and even to your forecaster to be able to analyze the data and to know what kind of actions you need to take, possibly short and long term.
Yeah, it reminds me of it's the in-game decisions, the in-game coaching, the in-game change of plans when things aren't going exactly the way that you thought, right? So I make a plan and I expect that that plan's going to work for me, but things always, like, you're always going to get thrown some unexpected things, whether it's we need some specialized training, maybe it's short training that we need to update people on, a product update or a process update. We need some additional coaching, or maybe even, right, I had a whole bunch of people call in sick. Maybe there's something going around. Yes. I see that look. We're going to talk about shrink eventually, but right, I may have, or maybe, right, maybe there was a big event, a sporting event, and people are showing up late because they all stayed up too late to watch this sport. Like, there are just all kinds of things that can happen. And so those kind of quick changes to manage the actual what's happening on the ground that day, to me is intraday. And it sounds like that is to you as well.
Yeah, and think about, and this is probably the human aspect of the job, that sometimes someone is scheduled to do a specific type of work and they're just not feeling okay. So what are our options to tell them, well, you did sign the contract, so you have to suffer now, or we need to make sure that we accommodate that situation and take some actions. And I had so many times in my career when somebody comes at work and they did have the option to call in sick, but they did show up and they are like, I just don't have voice. I'm coughing all the time. I'm sneezing. I'm not feeling well, but I can handle emails. So yeah, I have two choices to, you know, you should do what I told you to do or to just rearrange the plans and to make sure that I accommodate the needs of my agents as well.
Yeah, I just had a conversation with one of our partners and their people are in the medical field and sometimes in answering questions about certain medications, they can have some really challenging calls, right? They're dealing with people that may not be able to afford a medication or they're struggling. And some of those calls can be very emotionally taxing. And so there are times when you just want to say, hey, you know what? I can tell that you had a really rough call. That was a challenging call. Go take a quick 5-minute break, even though that's not on the schedule, right? You weren't scheduled for a break. Maybe you already had a break, but I know that for you to perform at the level that I need you to perform, I need to give you a minute. And those are the kinds of quick changes that we can make intraday.
I am so excited that you mentioned this one because I'm quite passionate about criminology of all things. I'm listening to crime podcasts every single day. And a lot of times I'm listening to 911 calls because I'm also interested in how agents are actually handling those calls. And I'm just thinking, one of these calls is absolutely going to drive me to the wall, probably, because they are difficult, they are time sensitive. You get one thing wrong and somebody might die, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're working under a lot of pressure already. And if we're not able as planning teams to react or to give you the breather, can you imagine handling those calls one after another after another? And you're dealing in all sorts of situations. You're dealing with victims of domestic abuse. You're dealing with victims of crime. I can't imagine that we're just not going to take that impact and we're not going to react from planning perspective to it. It's just, can you imagine being that person on the phone reaching out and then the agent is like, sorry, I can't at the moment.
Right. Yeah, it's such a critical service and it is emotionally taxing, and we need to be able to make sure that the people that are providing that service are in the right headspace to do so. And sometimes that just means I need to deviate from the plan just a little bit to give someone that moment to kind of refresh, catch their breath and decompress. Yeah.
Absolutely. Fully agree with that.
I want to know, we've talked about a few things here, but what do you think the biggest myth about WFM is?
Oh, that it's boring. Yeah, first of all. Good with this one. Yeah, first of all, that it's boring. And I know that we're talking maybe a lot about data here, but for me, that's the second myth. Data is great. We can't do without data, but there is so much that goes into it behind the scenes. You need to be able to engage your agents, your team leads, your operations manager, contact center manager, if you're working in a contact center, and you need to be able to explain numbers in a story and explain how that story impacts the business, your targets, your cost, your revenue. And that's not necessarily only data. That's, you know, our agents can't cope with that anymore. This is what I'm observing. This is what I have tried. This is how our operational reality looks like at the floor. So yeah, for me, it's a myth that it's mostly a function that deals with data that sits behind the desk in the end of the hallway, you know, in the end of your room and doesn't engage with anyone.
Yeah, it's there is a lot of data though, right?
There
but is. That mm-hmm. I love that you're talking about that data has to tell a story so that we can make sense of it. I reflected back in an article that I wrote about a really great agent. She was wonderful. When I was a trainer who struggled with average handle time. And she was looking for help at one point and was like, I don't, you know, my supervisor is talking to me about my average handle time and I'm struggling to get it down. And it was pushing 20 minutes. So we're not talking about, right, a really kind of we're over by 30 seconds kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she was super proactive with her customers, right? Just went through everything. And I'm sure all of her customers loved her. But at the time, I struggled to be able to explain to her why handle time was important. And while I don't think handle time is necessarily the most important KPI, it does have an impact on the business when you have, you know, an expected kind of range of handle time. And then you've got a few agents who are really way far out of that range because they throw the whole forecast out. If you're expected to support X number of customers per hour, and instead you get two, like we needed another person because you're taking so long to deal with these customers. And I think being able to, when I looked back, I was like, well, I wish I could have told this story to her to explain the pressure that she was putting on other customers and the other agents around her because she was probably spending too much time with a customer instead of focusing on their problem and solving it efficiently. There was a little too much friendly talk, too much getting to know you kind of bit. And I'm sure customers loved her, but like, we still, there is an efficiency that needs to happen to make sure that everything runs smoothly.
I agree. For a second, I thought that you're going to try to catch me off guard because of a post that I have made about the <everything. laughs> I am going to come clean. I don't like it as a KPI for the agents. I don't. It's important metric for me as a planner. It's inevitable metric. I can't do my job without that metric. It is important performance indicator for the agents. For me, it's not a key performance indicator, right? Because say, for example, that you're working in an organization about sales and upselling, and that agent is actually spending more time on the call, but that leads to more sales. I'll take that agent, and I'll probably gonna give them bonus about it. But you're right, there should be efficiency. That efficiency, though, as you mentioned, should come from either your quality analyst or your team leader that should provide some kind of tools to their agents. Okay, this is the script you follow, and this is if you follow that script, that's how you arrive at that average handling time. Saying that, I do remember a case from my career where actually we were noticing exactly what you mentioned with several agents, and it turned out that the target should be completely different. It should match what they're doing and not what we currently have. So it's definitely an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of businesses focus on driving average handle time down, right?
Yeah.
But really, average handle time, number one, should be a range, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're way too low, you're not doing your job, right? You're not supporting your customers properly. If you're too high, there are probably things that you can do to bring that down. But to your point, our expectations of what happens during a customer interaction from a quality standpoint should drive how long that takes, because what ends up happening for agents is if you set an aggressively low average handle time, they're either going to cut corners on quality to make it happen, or they're not going to meet it. And so if you want that number to come down, what you really need to do, aside from right, specific agent behavior, right? But if you're looking at it holistically, what you need to do is look at what is our expectation on every call, and what can we change about what we expect to happen on every call to impact that number? Do we need to say, thank you for calling brand X when we answer the phone if they already know who they're calling? Those 2 seconds can actually make a really big change if you start to chip away at little things like that. But if you say, no, I want you to keep doing all the things that you've been doing, but I want you to do it faster, good luck with that.
Yeah, and I think this is where we also tie it up with technology, because one of my frustrations as a customer is dialing a contact center, then I'm asked during the IVR to provide all of my data, personal identification number, my password, anything. Then I go to an agent and they ask me the same stuff. So I'm already getting a bit angry, like, okay, I just wasted my time in your IVR, so I can waste it now repeating.
Right. The same, and then they transfer you to someone else, and that someone else asks you for all the information again as well.
Yeah, there you go. So that's also a component of average handling time. That's probably your process. So you as an agent, you're trained to ask those questions, to confirm those details, to do step 1, 2, and 3. And that's how you arrive to a wrong baseline to start off with.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about technology as it relates to WFM, not the agent experience, but WFM, right? I can use a spreadsheet with your favorite formula, an Erlang C formula, to do some pretty basic WFM work. When do I, as an organization, need to say that's no longer sufficient and I need to look at a solution that does all the things?
It's a very interesting question. I would say that it depends on your size and your complexity as an organization. Because I would argue if you work in a very, very complex organization where you need to have a lot of flexibility when you have different set of rules that can potentially impact the time that you're spending creating a basic schedule, maybe it's worth already to invest in a WFM tool. Having that said, if you don't have a lot of complexity, if you only deal with fixed schedules, if you are having very little size of your organization, maybe you can continue doing what you're currently doing in the spreadsheets. It's definitely a conversation about what is it that you want to achieve. Are you in a growth trajectory? Are you expecting to recruit 50% more? Are you expecting to give more flexibility in your schedules? Do you want to track schedule adherence that you're not able to track in Excel? So it also depends what kind of flexibility do you want to provide to your agents. Do you want them to be able to request vacations automatically, to swap their shifts? So those are the questions that can potentially lead you to want to invest into a WFM solution.
Yeah, all of those things, right, eventually kind of grow together, and the complexity will at some point get to a point where you go, it's worth the investment because I'm spending so many man hours doing this manually, or spending time doing approvals and saying, yes, you can take PTO, or yes, you two people can switch schedules. That works relatively well in a smaller organization without fancy tools. But at some point, you may need the fancy tools.
Absolutely. And to add to this one, we should never underestimate the possibility of mistakes. And if those mistakes are reflected into your payroll as an agent, for example, because somebody just created wrong file or something didn't get saved, whatever kind of situation is. Or, for example, you didn't save your file, which reflected the hours that you're sending to your clients, so they actually are paying you more than they should, and they start arguing about the hours that you're sending them. All those kind of things you need to consider, because with WFM solutions, it's rather safe. You know, you have that flexibility to check who is updating what, when was the last saved version, and it's easier to cross-check that information.
Yeah. One of the things that I think we probably underestimate is the value that a really good WFM solution for my organization has on employee experience. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I have worked with solutions that are expensive solutions, you know, so they're already costly for organization, but also for the planners as user, they end up wasting more time doing workarounds to try to get that solution to do what it should be doing at the first place. Now, when you start going into that direction, that means that this is translated in more effort for the agents as well. So at some point, you kind of wonder, do we need the WFM solution, or is that the right WFM solution for us? The problem is that when you're at this point, usually the senior stakeholders don't necessarily want to invest in a different solution. They want you to keep on trying to make it work. And then eventually it goes wrong for everyone. But if you make your groundwork, and I am preaching for people, if you want a good WFM solution, ask the vendor to do a custom demo for you. Ask them with your exact criteria, your exact requirements and data, to show you how it would work in your environment. because it's unrealistic to think that you're gonna buy the licenses, you're gonna implement the WFM solution, it's not gonna work, and next month somebody is gonna tell you, yeah, let's just try another one, don't worry about it, we just wasted so much money, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely a frustration when you find out that the solution that you've invested in doesn't actually work for your business. And so I do think it's critical, and I've experienced this. I mean, we've invested in a WFM solution that just didn't work for us and had to scrap it. And there's a lot of work that goes into that implementation and trying to get it to work, only to say, well, it doesn't actually work, so we're just going to go back to what we were doing before. And there's a lot of wasted money that goes with that. And so, to your point, it's critical that I do all the work up front to try and make sure that I've got a solution that's going to work for me. But then there's the other option is I could talk to an expert about it who maybe could help me through that process. Is that what you do?
That's exactly what I do. So for any help about, I'm trying to sell myself now, for any help about implementation, reach out to Irina. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Sometimes it is seen wrongly, in my opinion, as a cost involving consultancy on top. But consultants are the one who have seen basically everything from different organizations and are not biased towards a certain solution. And they can tell you the best practices that are going to be relevant. And that's very important for your specific case. Because I really, really hate as a consultant when somebody starts talking to me about the right solution and there is only one solution that they know of. That's the only thing. Or about best practice, and this is the only practice that they have ever done. Every organization is different. People are different. They're in a different spot in their career at the moment. So you need to be able to react to that and see, okay, we can do it this way, we can do it that way. This is what that solution is going to help you with. But regardless of the solution, one thing that I'm always saying, if you do not have a good process behind it, solution is not going to help you. It's going to waste your money. And I'm sure, Rob, you have heard the expression garbage in, garbage out. We're talking.
Yeah.
About solution, that it is reality. The solution can only do as much. It's a tool that it can either drive good results or it can drive terrible results, but you're in the driving seat, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, to your point, one size does not fit all, right? I'm in the technology business and I know who our ideal customers are and who customers are out there that it, even if they came to me, I would say, well, you know, we're probably not the best fit for you. But not every provider thinks like that. A lot of providers just say, yes, I will take you on as a customer, even if we're not a good fit for you. But a consultant is that person in the middle who can say, look, I've seen an organization like you try to use this tool and it didn't work. But I've also seen an organization that is similar use this other tool and it worked really well. And here's why. And, right, the tool itself, here's what you need to do up front to make it work for you. Because like any other technology, you just don't just plug it in and say, woohoo, everything's great. There's still some work behind it.
Yeah, and this is the great part about consultants, that they can prep you and they can tell you what do we need to look out for. Because if you have never worked with WFM tools, if you don't know necessarily how vendors are behaving or what are the things that you need to watch out for, a consultant can tell you, hey, check this one, check this one, check this one. And this is experience that's invaluable in this stage of your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So we didn't talk about shrink, but I do want to just quickly touch on some of the metrics that go into WFM. There are a lot of them. Can you pick one or two metrics that you think people don't understand very well and help us understand them a little bit better?
Well, you mentioned it already. Shrinkage is definitely one of them. There are a lot of problems in a lot of organizations with shrinkage not being understood. For one, not all of the categories that go into shrinkage are necessarily either understood or tracked and applied in your calculations. I have worked with organizations that did not think breaks are part of your shrinkage, and I am actively trying to explain, you know what, everything that's not related to your customers is shrinkage. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. People need to have their breaks, but that means that you're going to have less people at this moment able to handle your customers. That's all that we need to track and make sure it's understood. But definitely not a lot of organizations knows everything that goes into shrinkage, and it's such a vast category. It goes from technical issues to breaks to vacations, absences, lateness, somebody just abuses with the personal breaks, for example. That definitely it's something that should be looked into. Now, the other thing that just jumped to my mind is because we talked about average handling time, one thing that I would say is more valuable to me when you're tracking it to compare the handle time versus your after call work, right? Because somebody can still be in target, but if their talk time to a customer is 10 seconds and their after call time is 15 minutes, there's definitely something wrong. And this is one thing that I don't see it tracked very often.
Yeah, those sub metrics can be really enlightening when you dig into them. And if you're not digging into them, you can be missing some bad agent behavior, or you could be missing technical issues that are creating problems. Today, in the contact center world, because we have cloud solutions and because we are post-COVID, or kind of, we have a lot more agents who are working at home, right? And so the technical issues that agents experience at home can vary much more widely than the technical issues that they experienced within the contact center. You know, if we had, you know, some internet issues in the contact center, it's really easy for us to know that because it affects everyone. You and I were just talking about, you know, Wi-Fi issues before we hopped on and started recording. And certainly those connectivity issues at an individual agent level can cause problems, and not necessarily problems that the agent understands that it's connectivity that's causing it. And so they may not bring it up to their supervisor to say, hey, I'm having issues today, even though that's what's driving the problems. They may think people are just hanging up on me today for some reason, or I'm getting a lot of calls where nobody's there today for some reason. And an agent may just dismiss that. When we're able to dig into the submetrics and identify outliers, that's when we can figure out what's really going on and hopefully solve for that.
And we spoke a little bit earlier on about real time, right? So for me, this is what real time people especially should be looking for. Okay, I have noticed that there is something. Can you let me know? Just if there is a technology issue, I can go and speak to person 123 and fix it potentially. But that's exactly how it happens, by engaging, by monitoring. There is something that looks different than engaging with your agent advisor or even team lead, understanding what the situation is and then react on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you're like, I really wanted to share this with everyone?
Probably many things, to be honest. It's workforce management is that thing that I'm super passionate about, and you are such an amazing guy, Rob. You're making me
Oh.
so much ease. It's very easy to talk to you. So for sure there are a lot of things, but I enjoy this conversation so much that I Can't think of anything at the moment.
WFM is not boring.
No, nope.
Well, Irina, I really want to thank you for joining Next in Queue and talking about this. I know everyone who's out there in the contact center world, if you're not already a WFM expert, if you've listened to this episode, number one, you already know more than you did before. And if you need help with your WFM, whether you're looking for a new solution or maybe you just want some advice or you want to find out, hey, are we doing this right? Talk to Irina. You can find her on LinkedIn. We are absolutely going to have a link to that in the show notes. And yeah, reach out. Give her a shout.
Thank you so much for the kind words. And thank you for having me. It was absolute pleasure talking to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Irina. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy To and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.